Welcome to Black at School, the USC Race and Equity Center's series on addressing racial problems that disadvantage Black students across America. Black at School offers parents and families language, tools, and strategies to disrupt racism and racial inequalities in classrooms, in curriculum, and in their children's interactions with peers and educators. In this first episode, Sean Harper, the Clifford and Betty Allen Professor in the Rossier School of Education at the University of Southern California, offers guidance on how to defend the teaching of Black history and racial truths in schools. Dr. Harper is the USC Race and Equity Center founder and executive director, and a past president of the American Educational Research Association. Harvard Education Press recently published his 12th book, The Big Lie About Race in America's Schools. Let's hear now from Professor Harper.
So our topic for today, we thought this was a good place to start. And it is around how to defend the teaching of Black history, as well as the teaching of truths about America's racial past and present in your children's school. As you all very likely know, those particular topics are especially under politicized attack right now. So I want to make sure that we spend, you know, some time talking about the politics of it all. But let me sort of zoom out and, you know, help us understand what's happening in our children's schools around the teaching and the miseducation around these topics. I'm going to start with a story. And it is a story that is only 13 days old at this point. I met a mother who is Black of an 8-year-old Black girl almost 2 weeks ago. And I was giving a Martin Luther King Day address at this particular place. So I was saying to this Black mother, I'm really looking forward to talking about Dr. King in my speech tomorrow. And she told me that her 8-year-old Black daughter had learned about Martin Luther King in school, but did not know he was Black, right? I don't blame the parent for that. I blame the school for the very sanitized, very raceless, one-dimensional way in which Martin Luther King was being mistaught in that particular school. It's what Cornel West calls the Santa Clausification of Martin Luther King. That's one example. Another, a couple years ago, there's this now viral video of a young girl, looks like she was probably a teenager. You know, she was speaking very passionately at some place, right? She was in front of a microphone speaking very passionately to a group of people. And she declared that when Martin Luther King freed the slaves, and, you know, many of us are like, oh, no, no, baby, no, no, no. Martin Luther King didn't free the slaves. No, no, no. Where did she learn that, right? These are just two examples of how Martin Luther King specifically is mistaught. But imagine what else about Black history and about racial justice and so on, racial equity, is not being taught in our children's schools. There's also this longstanding phenomenon. I'm 48 years old. This was happening when I was in school, and it continues to happen today, where really the only time that children are learning about Black history in school is during February, during Black History Month, right? It all kind of gets crammed into the shortest month of the year. At best, there are lots of schools around the country that do nothing to acknowledge Black History Month. But even those that do, right, that tends to be the only time that these topics and, you know, Black Americans show up in the curriculum. Even when that happens, there is a limited range of what is taught in the Black History Month topics. Yeah, they might learn a little bit about Martin Luther King, a little bit about Rosa Parks, perhaps a little bit about Thurgood Marshall. Yeah, that's pretty much it. there might be like, I don't know, like a very quick sort of drive by Harriet Tubman, maybe. But yeah, that tends to be it, right? Not the full sort of appreciation of Black history and Black topics. My colleague, a longtime colleague and role model of mine, Jim Banks, he's now a retired professor from the University of Washington. Professor Banks did a very rigorous analysis of textbooks across K-12 schools. And one of the things that he discovered is that when slavery was talked about, mentioned, or illustrated in textbooks, the slaves were always happy. They were happy slaves. They were presented and depicted as if they were happy, right? Now, I don't mean to suggest that there were not moments of joy and happiness that was shared among enslaved Africans here in the United States amid the terrorism that they were experiencing. But it was the terrorism that was not being depicted in the textbooks, which is my issue with this, right? But as Professor Banks found, they were always just so happy. So that would lead a third grader, for instance, to erroneously presume that slavery was a happy time for Black people in America. More recently, there have been these legislative attempts to sanitize how we teach not only slavery, but Jim Crow, Reconstruction, and other moments in American history. One of them was an effort that was afoot in Texas, where the Texas State School Board was attempting to have the language of slavery changed to involuntary relocation. Listen, involuntary relocation, I'm in my home right now. Involuntary relocation might suggest, I don't know, that somebody comes and, you know, pulls me by my coattail and tells me I got to move out of my house. I got to move across town somewhere. It certainly doesn't capture the fullness and the truth about what slavery actually was. It was not involuntary relocation. That's such a softening of one of the most horrific, if you ask me, the most horrific, thing that's ever happened to Black folks on the planet. I'll give us just a couple more just to set the context of what's happening right now and what has long been happening in our schools. So in Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis has been a proponent of a curriculum that amplifies the benefits of slavery. You know, those job skills that Black people got that they were able to, take with them to other professions is the narrative that Governor DeSantis and others in Florida want us to teach our children. That, yeah, those folks learned really great job skills. That slavery was on-the-job training, right? And then, of course, there was the effort in Florida, to significantly revise the AP exam on African-American history to, again, sanitize it and whitewash it. Ultimately, all of this has been a part of a larger legislative movement. It's what my colleague, Raelle Johnson, and I called the big lie about race in America's schools. We have a new book that is coming out this summer. Harvard Education Press is publishing it. In it, we write about how since 2001, legislation has been introduced in 44 states across the U.S. 44. Legislation attempting to ban the teaching of critical race theory. Critical race theory was not being taught, by the way, in K-12 schools, but also the banning of the teaching of other racial topics, racial truths about America's racial past and present. 44 states introduced legislation. 18 of those states have successfully passed statewide legislative bans on the teaching of these topics. There are several states that remain in limbo right now The legislation is still pending, making its way through the state legislature. Idaho is one of those states. Kentucky is another. But the point here, right, is that the teaching of the truth about America's racial past and present has not only been sort of a cultural or ideological debate, it has become now a legislative, mandate in many states that have banned, the teaching of these topics. Even in the states where there have not been state-level bans, there have been local-level bans where local school boards have outlawed the teaching of particular truths about America's racial past and present. Let's take just a quick, maybe 30-second break here. Jessica and I are going to invite you to respond to three anonymous poll questions. Okay, over 3/4 of you who are here responded. Let me share with you the results. Very few of you agree that Black history is taught well in your kids' school. About 20% of you are unsure, and over 70% of you do not believe that Black history is taught well. You do believe, 92% of you do believe that your kids' school should teach the truth about America's racial past and present. And it looks like, again, most of you, certainly well over half, almost 2/3 of you, do not believe that your kids' schools are doing a good job of teaching those truths, even though you believe that the truths ought to be taught. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. This is very helpful to Jessica and me as we move ahead. Okay, so I just spent the last few minutes talking about what's happening, but let me talk quickly about just some of the consequences. Certainly, these are not the only consequences, but some of them. Black children will grow up not knowing nearly enough about themselves, about their people, about their histories, right? They will be what Carter G. Woodson called, in his amazing book, The Miseducation of the Negro, they will be miseducated about Black history. But another consequence is that it won't be just Black children who are miseducated. Everybody else's children, white, Native American, Indigenous, Asian American, Pacific Islander, Latino, Latinx kids will also be miseducated about Black history, about Black people, as a result of these topics not being taught well at all in schools. Furthermore, children across all racial groups, Black kids, white kids, and other kids of color alike, who are taught that slavery wasn't that bad, will grow up not fully understanding the ever-presence of the effects of slavery on the contemporary condition of Black people, of Black communities. They will grow up thinking that, oh, Black people just suffering and struggling because we want to be, or because we're lazy, or because we're intellectually inferior, or any of the other lies that are taught about Black disadvantage and Black suffering, without understanding that, no, that horrible thing called slavery, right, that persisted for centuries, it's not a thing that we're going to get over in one or two or three generations of Black Americans, right? The last thing that I'll say here is that kids in schools, including Black kids, who are not being taught the truth about contemporary racial problems and racial realities in America will graduate from schools, they will graduate from college, and they will go into the workforce without a full understanding of what's real, what the real racial problems are, and how to solve them, right? Those are just some of the consequences. Now I want to get to the heart of why we're all here, and it's for strategies, right? I have, I think, a dozen recommendations for us, for you. So I'm going to go, fairly quickly, because Dr. Duqueer-Gumby and I want to make sure that we have enough time for Q&A with you. So the first thing that parents of Black children must do is vote. You must vote. You know, I talked about those legislative attempts to ban the teaching of racial truths in schools. Look, I don't want to create a politically partisan or divisive space in this series, but the facts are what they are. It ain't Democrats who are championing the suppression of the teaching of America's racial, the truths about America's racial past and present in these state legislatures. It's mostly Republican legislators, Republican congresspeople, Republican governors. That's just a matter of fact. Look, if you are a Republican, Jessica and I invite you into this space. We're really glad you're here. We're not attempting to alienate you, but the facts are what they are, that it ain't Democrats who are, you know, pushing these things through legislatively. So those of us who want better for our children, we got to vote, not just in presidential elections, but we got to vote and understand who the state legislator candidates are and what their stances are on education, right? That's really important. Number two, you will notice in lots of my recommendations that I'm a person who believes in solidarity or coalitions, right? So my second recommendation here is for you, parents of Black children, to unite with other Black families to insist that you have rights. You know, there's been this movement over the past couple years. Moms for Liberty have been at the forefront of that movement. There are a few Black mamas in there, a few. There are a few Black Asian American and Latino mothers in there, but the overwhelming majority of these Moms for Liberty, so-called Moms for Liberty, are white women, the overwhelming majority of them. And they are insisting that we have rights as parents to protect our children from the indoctrination and being taught these things that they're not yet ready to learn. We have rights. We need Black mamas, Black fathers, Black caregivers, so on and so forth, to also demand that we have rights too. So we got to do that, not one Black parent or family member at a time. We got to come together and build a coalition that is larger than that national coalition of so-called white moms for liberty, right? Listen, we got to unite and insist that we, Black people, we got rights too. Our children have rights too. Third, we have to join with other Black families to co-construct a list of topics that we want to see added into the curriculum of our children's school, locally, and into the state curriculum standards. That requires a letter writing campaign. It requires bringing together the NAACP with the Urban Leagues, with the Kappa Alpha Psi members, with the Delta Sigma Theta alumni chapter members, with Black churches and mosques and other places of religious worship. It requires us to come together and to aggressively write letters to the local school, first off, to principals of local schools, to the school board, and to, you know, the state curriculum standards people, insisting that these are topics that should, ought to, and must be added to the curriculum, not just for Black children, but for all children. All children in our community, in our state, deserve to learn the truth about race and the truth about Black history, so on and so forth. Fourth, we have to join with other Black families to co-construct a list of books. So the third recommendation was a list of topics. The fourth recommendation is specifically a list of books. And I'm going specific on books because one of the things I haven't mentioned yet that has been a part of this politicized attack on the teaching of truths about America's racial past and present over the past 3 years have been book bans. There have been book bans left and right all over the country. Toni Morrison books are effectively banned. I love a good Toni Morrison classic, by the way. But those Toni Morrison classics and other books written by very influential Black authors and other scholars of color and Indigenous scholars have been banned. So we Black families have to get together and make lists of books that we have read for ourselves that we believe to be and we have considered are age appropriate, right? We have to first make that list and insist that, you know, these books be re-added to classrooms and school libraries and so on. I also see a fundraising opportunity here. You Black parents should mobilize and go to local foundations together. So for instance, if you live in Kansas City, Missouri, the Kauffman Foundation, one of my former students is now the president of the Kauffman Foundation. If you live in Kansas City, you should go to the Kauffman Foundation and say, we need the Kauffman Foundation to invest X number of dollars into supplying books on these topics to Black children and to schools and so on and so forth. Now, I can't make a commitment on behalf of my former student who is the president of the Kauffman Foundation, but I can tell you that just as an example, right? Kauffman is one example of the kinds of local foundations that you all can and should go to, or you should go to good-hearted, liberal, white philanthropists who say they want to do something for Black people. Well, here's one thing you could do. You could buy a whole bunch of books that have been banned on particular Black topics and ensure that those books get delivered to classrooms, schools, and other spaces. The fifth recommendation here, it's really important to ask your kids' teachers, without hemming them up, without embarrassing them, but asking your kids' teachers specifically, what are you teaching about Black history? What are you teaching about America's racial past and present? I'm asking for a friend. You know, you could be nice about it. And just, it didn't have to feel like an interrogation, but I'm just curious, what are you teaching? How are you teaching it? When are you teaching these things? How did you yourself become well-versed in these topics? That's where the truth really starts to emerge. Here's the real truth. I don't care what the fear-mongering spreaders of misinformation and disinformation are saying about, you know, the so-called poisoning of America's school children. Listen, nearly 80% of K-12 teachers in the United States are white. The overwhelming majority of them are white women. I'm telling you right now, there's not hundreds, thousands, and certainly not millions of woke white women running around K-12 schools, you know, teaching, you know, flamboyant, outrageous, inappropriate things about race. So you should ask your kids, teachers, specifically, what are they teaching? You should also ask your kids what they're learning about Black history, about America's racial past and present. You see, that story that I shared with you about the mother of the 8-year-old daughter who had been taught about Martin Luther King, but hadn't been taught that he was Black. You know, that's important for that mother to know. It's important for you to know what your kid is learning. You know, I'll just tell you real fast. I have a 9-year-old. He's not quite 9. He'll be 9 next month. Nephew, whom I adore. He's my twin. You know, when all of this stuff was happening around book bans where he lives, even my then 8-year-old nephew had the wisdom to say, I don't know why they're banning these books. We're not even learning that. We don't even read those kinds of books in schools. Even an 8-year-old knows the truth, right? So you should have your 8-year-old or your 10-year-old or your 5-year-old or whoever, your 15-year-old, tell you the truth about what they're learning and not learning. And then you should use what they tell you to demand that educators do better by your kids, do better by all kids who attend the schools that your children attend. All right, so number 8 here is to leverage social media, your Facebook, your Instagram, your TikTok, so on and so forth, your LinkedIn. Leverage your social media to dispel misinformation and disinformation about what's happening in schools, it's important for you to do that, not just in defense of your own children, but as your contribution to the larger project to save our democracy, right? It's important as, you know, folks are passing around the playbook from state to state to state to state with all sorts of lies about what's happening. And that playbook is being passed around on conservative social media and traditional forms of media too. You got to please, please, if you will, could you also help to counter those lies with posts on your own social media that could in fact be retweeted, liked, shared, so on and so forth with millions of other people across the country to help them understand that the lies that are being told about what's happening in school are just that, that they're lies. Number nine, Black folks got to come together. Here's once again where I'm calling for coalition. You all have to come together. We have to come together to determine what the consequences should be for schools and for people who work in them who miseducate our children. What are the consequences? Yes, we have rights, and I'm insisting that we speak as a chorus about what those rights are, but we also ought to make some determination about what should happen to those teachers, to that principal, to that superintendent, to those school board members who continue year after year after year after year after year to miseducate our Black children and to miseducate everybody in our children's school. What should happen? Look, when we take a break, when I hand it off to Jessica, I'll drop a link in the chat to a piece I wrote for a special issue of a journal that my colleague Royale Johnson edited, where I call for a lawsuit for Black families to sue schools. This is mostly around school discipline inequities, but I don't know, like, might we have a case around the miseducation of our children as well? I'll drop a link in the chat and you determine if parts of it are adaptable to a local case-making. Look, it didn't have to be a lawsuit, but it's gotta be something. We as Black folks have to stand up and say, enough is enough. Here are going to be the consequences, right? Okay, three more. We got to invite some white folks into the tent too, and some Asian folks, some Latino folks, some indigenous folks. We got to build and pursue interracial coalitions because, as I said earlier, it's not just Black kids who are being miseducated. It's all kids. White kids are being miseducated about race in America. So we got to bring those same white folks who put those Black Lives Matter signs in their yards in summer 2020 when it was fashionable to do so. We got to go knock on them same white people doors and say, yeah, you was the white lady that had the Black Lives Matter sign in your yard, right? I need you to come on over here to this meeting with me and these other Black family members because we are trying to get these schools to make Black Lives Matter in schools in 2024, the same way that you were declaring in 2020 that Black Lives Matter, right? All right, two more. Look, I'm all about holding schools and school districts accountable. But we also, at some point, got to exercise some agency for ourselves and create out-of-school spaces at the Boys and Girls Club, at the YMCA, in Black churches, in Black community centers, so on and so forth. We got to create out-of-school spaces where we compensate actual teachers to come and offer some what we call supplemental instruction, right? Things that kids really should be learning in school, but they're not learning in school. I'm not saying let school off the hook, but what I am saying is both and, right? Hold school accountable. But while you're doing that, create this counter space where there is a formal teaching of the things that kids are not learning in schools about Black history and about America's racial past and present. That's important. And lastly, those are physical spaces in your local community. But lastly, we also ought to think about creating digital spaces. Imagine, right, bringing together Black girls who are in the fifth grade all across the United States together in a virtual digital space where they can learn about Black women, about Black topics, about Black men too, about Black queer people, so on and so forth, but where they can learn about Blackness. There's a way now with all of this technology that we have, the same way that Jessica and I have brought you together from all across the country for this series, we could bring kids together at different grade levels alongside other kids within their grades to learn the things that they're not learning. Look, those are just 12 actions that I think could make a serious difference.